Hello, I'm Carlton Sheets, and I'm sending you this audio program as a free gift with no obligation to pay anything for it. You see, your success is very important to me, and only when you succeed do I succeed. This program is a recording of a telephone conversation I recently had with one of my successful students. In fact, this individual has appeared in my national television program that you may have already seen. He is Tom Hudson, and he has owned my course for just a few short years. As a result, though, Tom and his wife Mary are now millionaires. More than that, their real estate alone gives them a positive, spendable cash flow of over $120,000 a year. And that's in addition to their million-dollar net worth. He simply followed my step-by-step no-down-payment system as it was laid out for him. How did he get started? What techniques did he use? What deal was he particularly proud of? What pitfalls or setbacks, if any, did he encounter? And most importantly, what advice would he have for others who would like to achieve the success that he has? Well, in this tape, Tom answers all these questions and many more. Right now, let's listen to Tom, and when he's done, I'll tell you about how you can begin a regular program of motivation, support, and understanding using my successful students as your personal mentors.
I'm going to be talking now with Tom from Michigan. Since getting my course, he and his wife have purchased 57 units, and you'll find this tape, I think, very informational and interesting because he likes to buy multifamily properties, and he goes into great detail about that. Tom's owned my course now for about 4 years, and he's essentially a millionaire. And according to Tom's goal sheet, and working his plan, will double his net worth in the next 4 years. And on top of that, and this is very impressive, Tom today has a positive monthly income of more than $10,000. And here again, he's on track that in 4 years, he'll be clearing $250,000 per year positive cash flow, and that's just from his real estate. We'll talk about owning property out of state and how to manage it. Now, let's talk to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Carlton.
It's nice to talk with you again.
Yes, it is nice.
And how are things going for you?
Well, they've been going very well. We've done pretty well, made some improvements since the last time that we spoke.
Well, let's go back to the time that you first got my course. You've had the course now how long, Tom?
I'd say it's been about 4 years now.
About 4 years. And when you ordered the course, you decided that you wanted to become a part-time investor.
Yeah, that's true. I think it probably stemmed from the fact that as we looked around ourselves, it seemed like everybody that we knew that had achieved anything had a considerable amount of property. And so it seemed like that must be the way to go.
What was your financial situation, Tom, if you don't mind my asking, at the time you got my course 4 years ago?
Well, at that time, our net worth was maybe around $45,000, $50,000, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Very respectable.
Well, it wasn't too bad. We were like most people, the average three-bedroom house and a couple of cars and, you know, some equity in those, but that was about it.
And in the 4 years that you've had my course, what's your net worth now, Tom?
Our net worth has gone to over $1 million now.
Oh, that is just fantastic. $1 million.
It's been great.
Well, you know, even though it's primarily, I would guess, equities and properties, you have literally made then about $250,000 a year as a result of your investing.
Yeah, that's right. Some years a little more, some years a little less, but on average, that's about right.
And Tom, what about your spendable cash flow each month? Do you have some?
We do. It's pretty respectable. It's somewhere close to $10,000 a month.
$10,000 a month? Wow, $120,000 a year.
Yep.
Oh, that is just, that sends chills down my back. That is so great. We'll go back to the time you got the course. Tom, were you, can you remember then when you opened it up? Were you kind of nervous or apprehensive or doubtful or?
Well, I wouldn't say doubtful. I think we'd already, we'd probably seen your television show a dozen times by that time.
Uh-huh.
I guess that seems to be pretty universal with people. They see it over and over again and said, well, maybe I'll try that someday. Well, eventually you get to the point where you say, well, today is the day.
Right.
And we did. So we were pretty confident by that time that the people that we were seeing on TV and the information that you were talking about was real world stuff, and it's something that we could really put to work. And as it turned out, once we got it and we started reviewing the material, listening to the tapes, it all really made a lot of sense.
So you were excited, and how about nervous? Were you a little bit nervous?
I guess where we really got nervous is when we started making offers on places, because I think all of us have probably been trained to think that you need big down payments and you have to go face stodgy bankers that are going to look down their nose at you in order to get pieces of property, and that's just not true.
How did you overcome your nervousness or your fear, whatever you want to call it, when you set out to buy your first property?
Well, we pretty much just, I guess, not really overcame it. We just lived with it and went ahead with the process. The first property we bought was a duplex that was owned by some partners, and they had let the property run down, and they just wanted to get out of it. And we knew that we could bring it around and get good renters and make the property something that the rest of the neighborhood was proud of again. All we needed was an opportunity. And so we managed to, on that particular deal, wasn't terribly creative, but we borrowed the money for the down payment on a credit line and got the rest of it going on a land contract, which we paid off 2 years later with a new mortgage. And actually put some money in our pocket at that time.
Did you ask the seller to discount the land contract, or did that occur to you at the time?
No, I wished it had. We were still pretty early on, and not all these concepts sink in right away, I guess.
Yeah.
And that was one that didn't jump to mind right away. I wished I had in retrospect.
Well, Tom, you said that wasn't very creative, and yet I wonder how many people would have thought to do that.
Well, I certainly wouldn't have if I hadn't have read and listen to the tapes.
Uh-huh. What about some of the other properties you've bought since then? You obviously have a number of them. How many units do you own now?
Well, I keep losing count because it varies back and forth. I think we're at 57 units now.
57 units.
Mm-hmm.
Boy. Have you concentrated more on single family or multifamily or just whatever comes along?
Well, pretty much whatever comes along. We have two single-family homes, but everything else is in multifamily. We have a 34-unit apartment complex. We have an 11-unit older mansion and carriage house. We have another 5-unit that's an older mansion that was converted back sometime in the 30s. We have an office building where our office is located, and it has two apartments.
So you're still a part-time investor?
Yeah, pretty much.
Huh.
My wife is pretty much full-time. She stays in contact with the local realtors and looks at a lot of properties and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And our children are grown and out of the house now, so it keeps her occupied that way.
What, as you look back, what are the deals that you've been most proud of, or you think were most creative?
Well, I guess the one that would be the most creative, certainly the one that surprised my wife the most when I got the thing to work out, was the apartment complex that we bought. Just a little background on it. The apartment complex was 34 units, and it was owned by a group of doctors and lawyers that had bought it sometime back in the early 70s when the tax write-offs were really good for non-full-time investors. And as the tax laws changed, it no longer became very practical for them. So they were very interested in getting out from underneath it. So they were asking $825,000 originally,
$825,000.
Mm-hmm. And I got them talked down to a purchase price of $725,000.
Mm.
And the deal kind of worked out like this. They took back a first mortgage for $685,000. I had... coming at closing, I had $10,700 and some odd dollars in security deposits, about $8,960 in rents that were coming due, and then I purchased from them at closing 15 days of interest so that I could move the payment from the 1st to the 15th, so I'd have plenty of time to collect rents for the next time around.
Very smart.
Then I had a few miscellaneous closing expenses, but not like you would with a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is, I bought from them a piece of property priced at $725,000. I had to bring about $5,000 to closing.
Wow.
And most of that was the prepaid interest just to move it from the 1st to the 15th.
Which was a write-off for you. Did you go into your bank account for the $5,000, or did you use credit for that?
We use credit lines.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what everyone really has available to them. If they don't now, through a bank, most people have a credit card or several credit cards that they could get that amount of money on. And
yeah.
That was a 36-unit apartment building.
36 units. It's now valued at about $1.1 million. So we've made basically between the purchase price and the current value about $375,000 right there.
Oh, congratulations. I think that is just great.
Yeah, it's worked out really well. And working on building up your credit lines, as you suggested, has worked very well, too. We have one credit card now that's $17,200 is the limit on it, and another one that's $14,000. So when we need to move quickly on something, we can do it now.
Well, great. Think about other creative deals you've done, other transactions. Any other come to mind?
Well, one other one that does kind of stick in my mind is there was a 5-unit apartment building that had a fire. And the seller wanted to sell it to a local church. They were going to tear it down and build a parking lot there, because it was right adjacent to the church property. And actually, the structure of the building was fine. One apartment had been damaged extensively, and then less serious damage to two other apartments, and smoke damage through the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it for what he was going to sell it to the church for, because the city didn't want it torn down in as much as it was a historic building.
Oh.
So I bought it for $18,000. We went to the bank right away and got a fix-up loan for an additional $50,000. And when it was all through, we put a new first mortgage on it. And I think we put about $15,000 into our pocket at that time.
Oh, that is great.
And it was totally rehabbed. And before
so
we even got finished with it, we had all the renters.
Owned the property, basically, no money down, put $15,000 cash in your pocket. And and we're able to rehabilitate it as well.
That's right.
Oh, that's exciting. And the property is rented for enough to cover the costs of ownership, including the mortgage.
Oh, yeah, plenty. You see, I was just looking at that. That one has a income of about $2,200 a month, and mortgages, interest, and taxes on it come to about $1,200. So it has a positive cash flow of about $1,000 a month.
Oh, nice positive cash flow, yeah. Tom, of all the properties you've bought, most of them apparently are multifamily properties. Is that right?
Yeah, that just seems to have worked out for us. We seem to have been in the right place at the right time for those kind of deals.
Now, have you ever bought a single-family home other than the one you're living in?
Yeah, we've purchased, let me see, we have two. One was a VA foreclosure, and we purchased that one we used credit line for the down payment again on that one. And it was a small house, about $30,000. I think we paid $27,000 for it.
Uh-huh.
And it's worth about $35,000 now. It's mm-hmm. been rented continuously since we bought it, and that was probably the first year of our investing we bought that. And in this last year, we bought another little house in a private subdivision, and it's been rented. That one was purchased on a land contract from the original owner. It was a retired couple that, they were just getting to the age where they couldn't come and visit the house any longer, and it was in kind of a resort area.
Uh-huh.
And we bought that with very little money down.
Tom, compare dealing with owners of multifamily properties with those who own single-family homes. Do you find multifamily easier?
We have, quite frankly, and I guess a lot of it's got to do with the fact that the tax laws put a lot of people that were involved in limited partnerships in kind of a bind, so there were a lot of things that people were trying to get out of, and still are, for that matter.
So you said properties that were purchased, multifamily properties that were purchased prior to 1986 for tax loss reasons are now pretty fair game for buying with some pretty creative terms.
Yeah, that's true. They're pretty flexible about selling things on contracts and notes.
What you're saying is that they don't want to pay the entire amount that they're going to have to pay because their basis in the property is low and their profit's going to be high.
That's right.
So they like to spread it out over a period of time.
Right, and that's a big help for them that way.
Yeah.
Plus they get some fantastic interest on the deal from their point of view, and they don't have the hassles of management anymore.
Uh-huh.
So they have the best of both worlds, really.
Sure they do. Tom, have you found that there's any particular going rate for owner financing for apartment buildings? I mean, have the interest rates that you've paid been all over the map?
They have been pretty consistently in the 10 to 11% bracket.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you have to come up with a little bit more of a premium that way. But generally, what that enables you to do is to get possession of the property, to get the management fixed up and get the property fixed up, and then go to the bank after a new first mortgage. And I told you about that 34 unit. We just this last year refinanced the first mortgage on that. We got $700,000 on a new first mortgage from the bank, moved the existing the sellers to a second mortgage, much smaller than their original one, but still a fairly substantial mortgage. And we put about $75,000 in our pocket.
Wow. Actually put $75,000 cash when you originally bought it practically no money down anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I felt many times that owners of apartment buildings are a little bit more professional, a little bit more astute, knowledgeable about real estate than the typical single-family homeowner. And in many ways, that makes it easier to deal with them for you as a professional with all the knowledge you have.
I think that's true. And also, the thing that's true is that they are generally people that are very busy and have their lives tied up in many different areas. And so they become, I guess, for lack of a better term, don't-wanters.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more easily and more quickly than single-family homeowners.
Tom, the properties that you bought, the multifamily properties that you bought, were they on the market for sale by owner or through brokers, or did you actually approach some people about selling?
Actually, it's been a little bit of everything. One apartment building that we bought was a fellow investor who still owns a lot of properties around our area, and one realtor in particular brought us the apartment complex, and I think he's brought us a couple of other pieces of property.
Are you doing anything with those realtors as far as them financing a portion of their commission?
Yes. On that 34 unit, maybe I didn't say that, but part of the money that I didn't need at closing was an $18,000 second mortgage to the realtor.
Well, that's very smart. Tom, what about managing these properties? Have you found the management problems to be about the same or non-existent as they are with the single-family homes?
Probably the single-family homes are better. I'd be lying if I didn't say that was true, just because when you get good renters in a single-family house, they seem to stay for a very long time. And in multifamilies, quite often they're people in transition, and they stay about a year, year and a half on average.
Mm-hmm. One nice thing about multifamilies, though, is that when you raise the rent, as I assume you do as a professional investor, keep up with the market at any rate, that rent raise usually goes all the way to the bottom line and creates value for the property.
Yeah, it sure does. No doubt about that at all. And that's been the focus of our trying to build equity in the properties, is to get the things to market value and try to hold them there as closely as we can and still be competitive.
Uh-huh.
And it's really paid off. Well, that apartment complex is a prime example of that. We purchased it for 7.25 and it appraised about $1.1 million.
Wow.
So.
And that's strictly because of some cosmetic improvements you made as well as increasing the rents.
Yeah, we didn't do a whole lot cosmetically, to be perfectly honest. We did some minor things, but mostly it was poor management on their part. Here's a good example. When we bought the place, the monthly laundry income was about $200 a month. As soon as we got control of it, it was immediately $500 a month.
Oh, my goodness.
Very strange.
Yes.
And now I think it's up around $800 a month.
For the laundry income. Well, that's a important second source of income.
Yeah, it sure is. And we have tried to put laundry facilities in anything that we can that is probably above 4 or 5 units.
Was my management course a help to you at all in that area?
Yeah, it was a big help. That was one of the things that you pointed out. I think you also try to follow that same pattern if it's above 4 or 5 units.
Exactly. I sure do.
Yeah, it's a good source of income. We're looking at another apartment complex. This one is in Texas, where we have our second home. And
Not to interrupt, Tom, but did that second home come about as a result of your success as a real estate investor?
Yeah, it did. We wouldn't have had the funds to be able to do it, quite frankly. And we also have a duplex down there, too. It's near Corpus Christi.
Uh-huh.
So and when, first we got the home down there, and we said, well, so long as we have a home down here, we may as well start trying to find some investment property.
You're a typical investor, Tom. You're like me. Every place you go, you look at real estate.
Yeah, that's really the truth. We recently moved our daughter to Tucson, Arizona, and moved her into an apartment complex there, and my first thought was, I wonder what they want for this.
The apartment complex in Texas, how would you manage that? Through an absentee, with a local professional manager?
Yes, in part. I think what we will do is probably split time between the two locations. And we do that I think we can do that pretty successfully. We'll have somebody local to handle the day-to-day stuff, but the major management decisions and renovations and even going so far as to making sure that people are correctly checked before they rent, we'll continue to do that.
Well, let's talk about some other transactions or some other deals you've done. Are there any that stick out in your mind as being particularly creative or that you're very, very proud of?
Well, like I said before, we've gotten some pretty good buys from a fellow investor in town. And because he was an investor, he was very flexible in his terms. And we bought some things on land contract from him with little or no money down as well.
Tom, is this an area that you'd encourage new people just coming into the business to explore, and that is trying to get to know other investors in their town, with the idea of either being able to wholesale properties to them or buy properties from them?
Yeah, I sure would. And one of the reasons for that is that not everybody is looking at doing management at this portion in their life. And so they're perfectly happy selling something and just reaping the benefit of the difference between the interest payments on what they have going out and what they have coming in.
So you'd say that dealing with other investors, you can deal on more of a professional level.
Yeah, that's true. They've been over the ground already. They know the true value of their building, at least as it currently stands. They may know the potential, but they may not have the interest in working towards that potential. But they certainly know that if you have to go to a bank to do everything, then they're going to have a lot harder time trying to sell their property.
Tom, have you ever picked out a property in your area that is attractive to you or particularly well-located that you'd like to own and just looked up the owner's name and said, have you thought about whether you'd like to sell the property and would you be willing to sit down and just talk about the terms under which you'd be willing to sell?
I have not done that, quite frankly. I can see that there's probably a lot of good that I can do myself by doing that. Quite frankly, I work another job full-time.
Oh, my.
And so a lot of times it's hard to find time to do as much as I'd like to do. I'm sure that if I were free to do it full-time, we'd probably be twice as far along as we are now.
Have you made $1 million in the last 4 years on that other job?
No, that's true. I haven't. But the other job is something I've been doing for a lot of years and something that I really love to do, and I just haven't come to the point where I've decided to do anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tom, I think there are basically five areas, if I can recall them, that you can use to locate properties. One would be to just drive neighborhoods and look for sale signs, and a second would be to look at the real estate classified ad section in the newspaper. A third one would be for real estate brokers to bring properties to you. A fourth one would be once you become known as an investor, people start calling you. And, of course, number five is what I just said, is where you find properties that are not on the market and seek to make contact with the owner. Any one of those areas that I've just talked about, has that been particularly important in your progress as an investor?
Well, when we started out, we did a lot of driving in neighborhoods, and that, surprisingly enough, led to not too many properties for us, but it did in a roundabout way, because in our area, we don't seem to have a lot of single-family houses that are for sale by owner. They seem to rely on realtors a lot.
Uh-huh.
But what it did do for us is it got us in touch and known by a good number of realtors locally, and then they started bringing the offers to us.
Well, that's important. I think that's great when you can, especially when you're working like you are, and your wife, you said, was active in the business, but still to have people bring opportunities to you is a real shortcut.
Yeah, it sure is. A lot of things have come about just because a realtor has stumbled on something and said, well, I bet Tom and Mary would be interested.
Uh-huh. Well, Tom, I know with all your success and your experience in the business, it's hard for you to remember those days when you were kind of nervous about getting started, but if you can, what advice would you give to someone right now who might be nervous or nervous about getting started or unsure if they could ever do what you've done?
Well, I guess most of us are nervous about every change that we make in our life, whether it was when we were 15 years old and we were going to driver's training and we weren't sure how we were going to react the first time we were behind the steering wheel of a car, or it was standing at the end of the aisle in the church waiting for your bride to come down the aisle. every facet of life has got changes, and they all make you nervous. But if you're just willing to go ahead and take that little bit of risk, and really for me it hasn't been much risk at all. We've never really been in a risk situation. But just kind of bite the bullet and say, yeah, I can do this, and then remember that so many people have gone before you that have done it.
That's a good point.
And every rich person that you've ever seen, probably, in whether they were on the evening news or somebody you know locally, a good portion of their riches are in property.
Yes, and came from property.
Yep.
Tom, if they're just getting started, would you encourage them to go in the direction that you have, and that is with multifamily properties or single-family homes? What would be your thoughts on that?
Well, I have mixed emotions. I like single families because of the inherent lack of management that they require, and that's very important for somebody just starting out because management can be a scary aspect. The plus side of the multifamilies is the cost per unit is so good. The other thing that is positive about multifamilies from my aspect is if I have 30 units and I have a vacancy, it's 1/30th of the money, and that's not very scary.
No, that's true.
If you
true.
Have a single family and it's vacant, it's 100% vacant.
Yeah. So, and the other thing, too, Tom, on that 36 unit you bought, let's face it, you did not put much more time in that, I would guess, than it would have taken you to buy a single-family home.
No, as far as working out the closing, it was probably a lot quicker in some respects than some of the other smaller properties that we've purchased.
Do you have on-site managers in most of your multifamily properties?
No, they're all local, so my wife handles all of that out of our office.
Rent collection, all the maintenance, and everything.
Right.
Uh-huh. If you were to buy away from your area, for example, in Texas, then you might consider having an on-site manager there.
Yeah, and with the duplex we have in Texas right now, we have a local realtor that handles any phone calls concerning that duplex, any scheduled maintenance that has to be done, and the rent checks come to her, and then she
forwards. What do you pay for that service?
Pardon me?
What do you pay for that service?
In that area, which is a resort area, it's about 10%.
Uh-huh. I have property in Texas also, and I pay 10% as well. So I think it's possible to get management in the 7-8% in some areas, but I think a good figure to count on is going to be 7-10%.
I would think that would be pretty good. I would be hard-pressed to pay more than that.
Tom, you've done so remarkably well, and I have a feeling that one of the reasons you've done so well, I mean, you're obviously a smart guy, and you're applying the techniques very successfully, but you've really kind of gotten a jump start through multifamily. I wonder if you could have bought 56 units or whatever it is you own in 4 years if you were buying single family homes.
Probably not, just because the number of units or the number of single families that, at least in our area, that I could have gotten with little or no money down or such a low proportionate amount of money would be a lot fewer.
Tom, have you ever done anything in the area of foreclosures, either conventional or government?
Well, we did a VA foreclosure that worked out pretty nicely for us. That was a single family.
How do you see your life continuing to change in the near and the long-term future, Tom?
Well, we're continuing to look for property all the time, and I figure if we've done as well as we have with as little investment of time as we have, we're going to do a lot better in a very short period of time.
Boy, that is tremendous and ambitious, I might add. So you think you can do better in the next 4 years than you've done in the past 4 years?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why, if a couple of things that we're working on right now, if they come in as I think they will, we should be able to double our net worth in the next 2 years.
So, well over, your net worth now is what?
Our net worth has gone to over $1 million now.
Oh, so more than $2 million you're projecting in the next 4 years, and your positive cash flow right now is?
It's about $120,000.
A year, $120,000
yes.
A year, and you think you can hit $250,000 in the next 4 years?
I don't see why that wouldn't be possible. As I told you, we were looking at a 58 unit in Texas. This is another situation. It was a partnership that went awry, and it has all the potential to make us a large amount of money in a very short period of time and wonderful cash flow.
And that would be through doing some refurbishment or by raising the rents?
A little of both.
Uh-huh.
It needs some cosmetic work, but it's in an excellent area. It's probably nearly 25% under the competition rent-wise.
Mm.
And they have some vacancies right now, but it's all management-related. I know that we could turn it around very quickly.
You know, the wonderful thing when you are where you are right now, you could have started with zero, with no cash and terrible credit, and once you build up a portfolio of properties like you've done, then it becomes easier and easier to buy properties because you've got equities you can take out, you've got credit lines that are very easy to develop once you own real estate. So it's just kind of a benevolent spiral, isn't it?
It is. It really is amazing how it seems to go up and up. And every month when we get our statements on different, just on credit lines, it seems like they've raised some credit line again. They just keep going up and up and up. Of course, we try to keep that under control, but it's a wonderful thing to have there to be able to move quickly.
Sure.
When you need to.
And I got to keep reminding myself all of this from a guy who's working part-time. How many hours approximately do you spend each week in the business, Tom?
Well, my wife probably puts in, actual office hours and maybe 25 or 30 hours.
Uh-huh.
And I spend a little time on the weekends, basically.
So just a few hours a week is what you're spending?
Yeah.
And if someone is fortunate enough or not fortunate enough to have a wife or a friend that could spend that kind of time, or a husband to spend that kind of time in the office, then obviously you could hire someone to do it.
Yeah, you could. And the proportion that you would pay somebody to handle some of the menial labor jobs that we just do as a matter of course really isn't that much.
Uh-huh.
We're just kind of maximizing our cash flow by handling some of it ourselves, but we could, as we do in Texas, hire somebody else to take care of those aspects of the thing.
Sure. As you think about someone just getting in the business and trying to follow in your footsteps, Tom, what kind of pitfalls or minor setbacks might you think about them encountering?
Well, I guess the one that that comes to mind the most for me is at every stage of the game, when you have to deal with banks, that will always be difficult. Mm-hmm. It gets better as you get more and more affluent and you develop some personal relationships with banks. They start treating you much differently, but they'll still be quick to say, well, gosh, you really got a lot of equity here, but we sure would like to see more just plain cash sitting someplace.
So, well, I know.
But I guess that's the only really thing that stands out to me. Banks will continue to be just a challenge, but there's plenty of other ways to get things without having to go to banks.
Now, how about rejection? Did you have to experience a lot of that early on, making a lot of offers before you got one accepted?
No, quite frankly, no. We didn't have that much rejection on our offers. We've had rejection on trying to get some of the financing done from time to time. As a matter of fact, I save any financing rejections we get. I think I'm going to put together a book of them someday. But whenever you get one of those, it just kind of points you in another direction.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you to realize that maybe you haven't thought of all the other possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tom, listening to you has got to be an inspiration to so many people. I just think what you've accomplished is fantastic, and you are a special person, but there's no reason that anyone listening couldn't do what you've done, or at least go well on the way toward doing it. And you know, as I tell people, people say, oh, I want to be a millionaire someday. Well, Tom, you are, but you know, think of the number of half millionaires and quarter millionaires there are in the country that are living life and enjoying it pretty darn well.
Well, that's true. And as far as me or my wife being anything special, we're just really quite average people. But all the information they need is in your course. All they have to do is just use it.
Well, I appreciate your saying that so much. Tom, you and your wife, continued success. And it's just been a real pleasure talking with you.
Well, I thank you for everything, Carlton. It has meant the world to us, and it's going to mean the world to us for the rest of our lives. We just aren't going to have to worry about being on the government dole like most people are going to end up.
One way or another, they are, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thank you for that.
Well, Tom, thank you so much, and you take care.
Thank you, Carlton.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Well, I certainly hope that you enjoyed our conversation. I think as you listen to that conversation, you probably noticed several different things. First, Tom is really an average kind of guy who has accomplished some extraordinary things by following a plan. Second, you are probably feeling some of the same feelings he felt when he began. Maybe a little uncertainty, insecurity, but a tremendous desire to improve your financial situation. And finally, if you're at all like the other people I've spoken to about this tape, you would love to hear from more people like Tom in order to get all the help and support you possibly can. Well, that's why I've created my Confidential Conversation series. It's 8 more insightful, full-length conversations. And in each one, you can get inside the mind of one of my actual students who has gone on to achieve great personal success using my no-down payment system. You'll hear how some people have found cookie-cutter type techniques that they do over and over again to create tremendous positive monthly cash flows, while others have settled into a program of getting cash at closing, gold mining foreclosures, or flipping lease options. All of them will share how they began and where they were financially when they began. They'll share the deal they're most proud of and what pitfalls they encountered along the way. You'll hear their well-thought-out goals and listen to their sound advice for other people who are ready to begin. Most of all, you'll get a feeling for how you can begin if you haven't already. And if you already are an active investor, you'll gain great insight as to how other professionals are doing the same things you are, but perhaps with a little twist or variation that could boost your success. To have your complete set of confidential conversations rushed to you, call the toll-free number enclosed with this package. Of course, as always, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. I certainly wish this kind of help was available to me when I began over 25 years ago. There truly is something special about people helping people, the human touch. And when you reach your desired success, and I'm confident you will, I hope you too will give a little something back by consenting to share your story with me and your fellow students. There's a tremendous feeling of fulfillment that comes from helping other people, and I want you to experience that fulfillment also. So call my office right now to begin or continue your journey toward financial independence and personal success. And thanks for listening.